So today I'm talking about a really exciting partnership that the University of Michigan has ongoing with AIDS Partnership Michigan, the HIV/AIDS Resource Center, Detroit Latinos, and the Ruth Ellis Center. And one of my community partners is here to actually talk to you. So I'm going to talk really fast so that he has more time to talk about the actual intervention development and how some of this work is being applied in the field. We have no conflicts of interest to disclose or to report, thankfully. And so what I'll do is I'll talk a little bit about how we ended up deciding to achieve a community engagement process that borrows some of the principles of CBPR but doesn't fully adopt all of them, and the challenges and the reasons behind doing that process. Identifying some of the challenges that have emerged from this process, but also some of the unique opportunities that we've found by putting in this hard work. And so finally, we'll talk about two case studies, one being the actual product of the partnership called UHIP, United for HIV Integration and Policy, as well as how that information is being linked into a really amazing community mobilization program on status awareness called Status Sexy. So I think that we've really tried to focus on community engagement because it's really easy from the ivory tower to come down and say, oh, well, HIV is such a big issue for Black and Latino young MSM, let's do something about it. And that sounds great, but unless you bring community partners into the fold and to have the dialogue, it's really hard to really tackle some of the structural conditions that influence Black and Latino young men's lives. As a Latino ex-young MSM myself, by a two-year criteria, I can wear that hat, but I can definitely also understand that my position as a faculty member in the University of Michigan has a lot of privilege to it, and I don't understand the same social reality. So actually having community partners on board keeps me in check and also makes me really think about privilege in a very different way. But it also, I think, makes the data and the research process much more meaningful, right? We're not just asking questions for the sake of asking questions. We're actually asking questions so they can feed into existing programs or new opportunities that may emerge. And so by doing this community engaged process, we're really trying to not only get good data, but ask the right question in a way that is socially situated and can actually address some of these structural conditions. I like the community engaged approach a little bit more than a full-scale CBPR, because CBPR takes a lot of time to build the networks, to build the relationships between community partners. And although our intent is hopefully to move towards that direction, at least we started recognizing that there are some key short-term opportunities that we can achieve through a community-engaged process. And so again, it follows many of the principles of CBPR, but doesn't fully recognize it yet as an equal partnership. I think that's one of the challenges that we're talking about right now, and we'll talk more about it later in the presentation. But at least it creates a foundation that we can all come to the table and start talking about where is it that we're going, what is it that we're trying to do, and how easy or difficult is that process going to be. It also allows us to recognize community partners in the research process and creating decisions, figuring out what is a priority right now for us, and how are we going to execute the research process and the translation of the findings. So, here are some of the mutual benefits that I think we've found. It's much quicker to translate the data into actual service provision. So I don't have to wait to present to you and then somebody to read my paper, and then perhaps, if you even read the paper, to say that there's something worthwhile in there. It actually goes straight to the providers in a much easier way. It allows them to also use the existing data and the new data to write new proposals when they are looking for funding in their own services. It creates more relevant and locally applicable data-driven research. It allows for new initiatives like the ones we'll talk about today. I think it creates stronger partnerships when you involve different agencies working towards the same goal at the same time. But it also builds research capacity, and that we've been seeing some really interesting dynamics about, well, how is it that we're going to recruit, and questions on why are we asking this question, and this sounds really techie or academic-y, let's just ask the same question in a different way. And that's all principles of good research, right? And so it's also really nice to be able to see that sometimes the partners are the ones teaching us the research process outside of the ivory tower. That being said, there are some challenges, and that includes understanding that juxtaposition between the research lingo and the practice lingo, right? So I call something a survey and they call it an assessment, or vice versa. And we think that we have a pretty good grasp of the community, and our partners and the academics think that we can move this along. And then the third partner in the dyad shows up, that weird stranger called the IRB that we all fear. And so it creates an interesting process, so that the IRB also understands that in partnership with our community partners, we can understand how to implement the data and data collection process much easier than what we think wouldn't fly. So for example, in one of our projects, we've had the IRB say, well, are you really going to ask people their HIV status? And what are you going to do if somebody says that they're HIV positive? So we can actually say, well, our community partners are AIDS service organizations, and we can link them to care much quicker if they express a need that they are looking for those services. I think it's also really important to recognize that community-based organizations are gatekeepers to a lot of the participants that we need, particularly marginalized populations like Black and Latino young MSM. And so you can start trying to do recruitment by yourself, and I think very quickly we learned that unless Bill is willing to come out with Andrew, who's a project director, to the bars, yeah, you're probably not going to have a really good chance of getting the data that you need. So it's also been great to coordinate recruitment and kind of rethink how we go about trying to get people to participate, as well as then involving community members to translate the data that we're getting in a way to rethink the paradigms that we usually use to analyze some of these results. So we actually started the process with a small needs assessment looking at the testing needs of Black and Latino young MSM, and then it became just young MSM in general and the larger Detroit area, and then it became this bigger process called UHIP. And UHIP actually had four goals. It's a two-year process, and we first, in the first year, wanted to understand a policy assessment, which we carried out by identifying stakeholders in the Detroit metro area and understanding what they thought as key providers to Black and Latino young MSM were the needs of the population, what are existing services, what are existing challenges, and in fact, Andrew will be presenting this tomorrow at 4:30, so if you're interested in the stakeholder data, don't miss out on that one. Shameless plug. And once we had that, we tried to really understand Latino and Black young MSM's needs as well. So we did a survey to understand what they thought, what was going on in their lives. And we're in the process now of integrating that data and creating some policy recommendations over the next year. And the intent is to not only build these policy recommendations, but also equip both the academic side and the community partner side on how the hell do you go about doing this, right? So this big policy sounds so scary and structure sounds scarier. So how is it that we go about translating this data in a way that we can all digest and help to change existing conditions, both locally, statewide, and potentially nationwide? And so as you can see here, we had a first year where we interviewed 50 stakeholders, and we just finished data collection not so long ago with 429 young MSM ages 18 to 29. And these are just some of the top initial major topics that were discussed in the stakeholder interview. And it goes from individual risk factors all the way to funding and resource allocations, violence, the lack of LGBT social spaces, and so on and so forth. And I think one of the biggest challenges has been that all of these sound so scary, both from the academic side and the partner side. Like, how are we going to tackle even the first one, which we're so much more comfortable with, right? Individual risk factor. And so we're in the process of really trying to understand, okay, so maybe we just have to take a little bit at a time and kind of work through that. And so as part of that process, we're doing this translational science where we're taking all this data, embedding it into existing services, as well as new opportunities. We're engaging in the policy dissemination, which is this year. We've had one training on policy and media advocacy. We're having a second one in a month, less than a month, in 2 weeks. We were able to get some funding to get young MSM in the community to analyze the data themselves. And so over this next year, they will be doing internships at the community agencies and putting it in their own words and social realities. We're scheduling community meetings to report back some of these findings, as well as development of some policy briefs. And so I will translate now I will transfer, not translate, I will transfer my my rest of the time to Bill Van Hemert, who is one of our most amazing community partners from AIDS Partnership Michigan, and he'll talk about Set a Sexy, so he gets the sexy stuff.
And there we are. StatusSexy.com is what was developed to be as a result of all of this research and of all of this data. We developed with a community-based organization. So we are an AIDS service organization, AIDS Partnership Michigan. We also were one of the leads with, as you mentioned, Ruth Ellis Center, which is an LGBT organization, Detroit Latinos, which helped us with the Latino Hispanic community, and with also HIV/AIDS Resource Center, which was in the suburbs area of Detroit metropolitan area. What had happened was we got StatusSexy.com. Out of base of all this, what we wanted was, you can see the three main points, is that it was a grassroots movement, it was a community mobilization, social media campaign. And what it was is it was to increase testing, HIV testing, and decrease stigma within the African American, it started with African American MSM community and also then it evolved into a Latino community. The vision was that we believe that there is nothing more sexy than confidence and confidence in yourself and your partners and in the bedroom. The guys added in the bedroom. And this is, goes about as to what Jose was talking about in terms of the academic white tower and bring it down to the level of the individuals, our target demographic, and bring it down to that, like, you know, eighth grade level. And how do you do that? We also then have a mission statement that the guys developed in terms of it's to increase, of course, testing and decrease the stigma around it and to empower our community. The community is the African American community that's in Metro Detroit area. It developed first as this website, it's StatusSexy.com. And from there it grew into a whole social media campaign. StatusSexy.com, we try to do a low-cost strategies. It was user-friendly in terms of maneuverability through it. We also had organization and youth impact, so all the ASOs and CBOs were involved, the youth were involved. The youth, if you're familiar with the empowerment programs that are in HIV community, we had an empower program, and those were the guys that were out there recruiting for us. We also had what's called swag. We had posters, we had palm cards, we had temporary tattoos, we had everything right here. You can see the collaborations on these. We worked with not only LGBT organizations, we worked with the STD organizations, with Planned Parenthood, with the county health department. We were the resource for these type of community advisory planning groups. We had planning groups in three areas, City of Detroit, Pontiac, and Albert. We had three different types because City of Detroit, it was a house of ball community. If you think of us, the Paris is burning and that type of image. So in Detroit, it was a lot of house of ball community. In Pontiac, it was a suburb of Detroit area, and that was an underground. Then in Ann Arbor, it was a collegiate. That's where University of Michigan and Eastern and Washington Community College. So we took Status Sexy, and we had to have the brand of it, but we had to do different messages for each of those different demographics. The implementation is we developed what's called a sexy team, typical outreach volunteers that would go out into the community and would help us distribute these cards, would help us, as you saw earlier, in terms of the young men's study and that little round thing, little round palm card in terms of your community, your voice. Status Sexy was able to host the events and allow the other agencies to come on. And so we were the ones that could get the information out. They could come into our areas. The big thing that was developed, and this is an example of our house and ball community, we did a step and repeat. And we had that was one of our models. The guys themselves were the models. They went out in the community. This was an event that happened in one of our runway ball communities. And they would then go and get their own social networks and develop that onto Facebook, onto Twitter, onto YouTube. And it all came back to the StatusSexy.com website. The whole purpose is to make StatusSexy.com, it's whether positive or negative, knowing your HIV status builds confidence, and confidence is sexy. And that's the total brand of StatusSexy.com. The next movement is, as Jose was presenting, they're developing in the Ivory Tower, the policy briefs, and they're going to present it to our guys and how to make the policy briefs into like cliff notes and how to have them go out to their congressmen, go to the state capitals, and how have them be the movement. And so hopefully with continued funding, we will take Status Sexy from being just a social media campaign, and it's going to be a movement. And on World AIDS Day, December 1st, go to statussexy.com, and you'll see what we will be doing in terms of outrolling a whole new movement campaign. Thank you.